All right, so welcome to another episode of Build in Public. In this episode, this is obviously a special episode because we are here for the conference. We are here in India for IBW. And so for everyone who doesn't know me, I work in the content team of Economics Design. And so far, Lisa is the only one looking after this Build in Public series. Now I plan to get a little bit more involved into this. So this is sort of my introduction. In this episode, I will be asking Lisa a bunch of questions related to the bear markets and how she has navigated the company as a company founder. And not just that, there's also the additional fact that she has started Aurus in this period itself. So I want to get a little bit deep into what that experience was like, and we'll just go a little bit into her mindset as a company founder. So without any further ado, let's get started. So the first thing, as you said, that I've been working for 2 years now. And so when I had joined in the late 2021, it was a bull run, right? Everything was good. We were expanding, I remember, very aggressively. Then 2022 came a bear run and things slowed down. And not just that, but I saw a lot of drastic changes in the company culture, in the way we were functioning, in our hiring process, and a whole lot of other things. I understand that based on the extrinsic markets, you have to kind of make changes to the company and your systems and workflows. At that point, firstly, two questions. How was that experience like? And secondly, at that point, did you ever reach the tipping point of your mental health where you're like, what is happening? I can't take this anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Good question. And I'm going to start with two points. The first point is that so far, the company's almost 5 years old now. Yeah. And the good thing is we have never let anyone go because of economic situation, yeah. Right? I think to me, it's very important as a leader to manage the team, yeah. Right? Yeah. And not overhire. You have to let people go during downturn. Yeah. We have never done that. We only let people go because they're not a good fit to the company anyway. Right. Yeah. So thankfully, that's a good situation. The next thing you mentioned, we move towards the culture component, yes. Which is very strange, to be honest, because usually during bear markets, yeah. You double down on sales, yeah. Double down on aggressive sales. But the late of 2022 and pretty much the fall of 2023, we're focusing very much on culture. And that is because this is a system I want to introduce and share, because yeah. I'm not going to share that in other sharing sessions. Yeah. In a company, there are four priorities. Yeah. And it's like a triangle, pyramid, right? The top is very important, but you need the base, otherwise you can't go up.
Correct.
So the four priorities, the bottom is that you need to make money.
Yeah.
If you don't make money, it's not a business. Yeah. It's a hobby. It's a fun thing to do. You don't take things seriously. So if you don't make money in a business, it's not a business, something else is it. Yeah. Number one, as whatever you call it, you need to make money in a business. Number two is creating processes, creating systems. Yep. Once you nail down the making money part, you move to the next part on processes, creating systems, and that's how you can scale.
Yeah. Optimization.
Yes, optimization. Yep. Because we really have a cadence of how things, yep. Like how we do all legal stuff, how we work with clients, how we engage with clients during the engagement period. Yeah. Yep. There is a set standard structure, yep. Because we need to have a level of standardization because we're a company. Yep. We talk about that a bit later, but we're a company, not an agency. So yep. Level of standardization. Whoever works on the project, yep. Has the same output because the output represents the company, yep. Output doesn't represent the individual. Today, we have a standardized system and structure and process to optimize the pick. Yep. And then the third one is culture. Yep. At the end of the day, as whatever people say, it's people that builds the company. Yep. Like you. Yep. You know, without you, we would not be here today. Yep. And it's very important to build the right kind of culture. Yep. It's one thing to hire a lot of bright people together. Yep. It's also another to make sure they work together as a team. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, one of my previous videos, I talk about a lot of hiring mistakes. And yeah, hiring hire people before they're absolutely brilliant, top of the game, you know, subject matter experts. But they don't gel in the culture. And sure, you could fit the two parts, but if you don't fit the culture, you're not building the team. You might as well be an agency, you know, a one-off individual contributor, not a team. So building culture is very important. And the last step is governance. And governance became a lot more important. Like, governance was already important, but it became a lot important by me writing down the governance rules in our company after the FTX crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they were commingling assets. They were moving things from one to the other. They didn't have proper accountability. They didn't have proper accounting. They didn't have proper ownership. and governance in the company. And this is a big problem. People think, oh, you're just a small startup. It's not about that. Whatever size you are, you should have proper governance, you should have proper accountability. So these are the four stages. Make money, optimize processes, build culture, and corporate governance. And these are the different important things. Now, the thing is, it's not that you make money once and you do everything else.
Yeah.
You explore new markets, you explore new products, and you constantly come back to the making money part. See, our priorities shift up and down in this four-stage process, right? So during the bull market, we're doing the money-making part, we're optimizing and building processes, and then just naturally, we move towards the culture because you move to the culture part, and that was in 2022, 2023. And then we're also doing a lot of corporate governance, especially in early of 2023. And then you just come back to the cycle again, or you go up and down in the cycle. And you come back to building new products, exploring new markets, you come back to money making, optimize processes, build the culture given with new expanded products, new expanded team, go back to corporate governance, and redo the cycle all over again. So I would say that the reason why we focus so much on culture is not because of macro market. It's because of how we behave and how we are as a company. And this is, to me, that's very important because I'm here to build something for a long time. I have a 20-year plan and I put everything in Notion. Everything is a full spirit. I don't have exactly where we're going to do year on year, but I know this is direction, how we're going to do every 5 years, what is the long-term plan, short-term plan, mid-term plan, things like that. Because of that, because there is a long-term direction, I'm not changing things just because of market conditions. If you want to stay here for 20 years, we will see a lot of bear market and a lot of bull market. This is not our first bear market. It's not our first bull market. We've done this before. We'll do this again.
Yep.
So to me, macro conditions, which I know it's weird that people usually don't think about that, but to me, macro conditions are just a subset of things that happen.
Yep.
It's not things within my control. And I can't just overfire during the bull market and then just fire everyone in the bear market. Like, that's not the right way. And to me, that's not the right way you run a business. You run a business because you're building something for the long run, and you build them in accordingly. So that's why that's a big shift. Now, going back to your second question on mental health, and that's a very good question because the good thing is we've done this before. Do this, right? It's not the first bear market and experienced this before. And also, a company changes all the time. Different market conditions, different culture. You know, as we develop the culture, some people might agree, some people might not agree. So how do we find the balance? How do we get people's buy-in? How do we listen to what kind of culture we want embedded within the team? How do we optimize processes? How do we allocate ownership and accountability of different parts of the product to different people? And it shifts a lot, it changes a lot. So in general, as a company, there's lots of ups and downs. There's a lot of volatility. As a company, starting a company already has a lot of volatility in it. Being in a crypto space, it's a little more volatility, right? A lot. Volatility and uncertainty. So, and the good thing is, I've got 6-7 years and training in this space already, working on this.
Yeah.
And so, it's not easy, but it gets easier. That being said, there are many, many days that's extremely stressful. You know, I've been charting. I do a lot of documentation of just my, just checking in with myself as well. And I do notice that I have at least one burnout every quarter.
Yeah.
And that's not fun. Like, burnouts are really not fun.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you experience burnout too. Everyone experiences burnout,
right? Yep.
And it's, you just get so stressed, you don't want to work, you don't want to get out of bed, and every day just kind of sucks.
Okay.
But I think that's not a bad thing. I think that's a time where your body's telling you, hey, let's take a break. You know, you've been accelerating so much, let's take a pause. And I take a pause. I take days off, I take a week off, I go to the mountains and hike, I go and dive, I go and do something and get my mind off of work, come back with a clearer mind. And that, I think that's just normal. Life is not sprinting all the way. That's how you burn out. The whole hustle culture stuff of you doing too many things, I think it's not very good for mental health. And instead, it's a marathon, different parts of random sprints, just like product design or just like, you know, product launch. You sprint for 2 weeks and then take a pause.
Sure.
2 weeks and take a pause. And it's a little check-in that we had. And you can also see that because we do everything by quarter in the company, right? Our OKRs by quarter, our performance evaluation by quarter, a lot of check-ins all done within the quarter. A quarter gives us a time to pause. And that's why in the last couple of quarters, we introduced the last week of every quarter, we do a big collective pause.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Where we pause, we stop, we reflect on what we've done, where we're going, and evaluate, are we doing something that's taking up more time but not really adding value? And how do we check it? We do shuttles as a team, and I also do check-ins on my own.
On personal.
Yeah, that makes sense. Two things. So the first thing, speaking a little bit on culture, like personally, because till I think mid-2022, our culture was vastly different than what it is now. And back then, to be honest, I always felt like I am an employee of a company. I was doing my work. My performance reviews were on point. Not to flex, but the thing is that I was doing the bare minimum and I was doing it well. There were no complaints about that. But as we've had this shift this year or half of last year, what I've noticed is on a personal level, I've been a little bit more proactive in the sense that I want to do things. And this doesn't really feel that I am working for someone or under someone. It is more or less that, okay, there's this YouTube channel. And that's one of the reasons why if people who have been consistently watching our videos, it's a little bit chaotic. I'm not going to lie. We are doing a whole lot of things. Our video aesthetics keep on changing randomly all the time. Thumbnails keep on changing. But that is because now I feel comfortable enough to experiment with it that much. And it genuinely makes me a lot more happy. It adds that because as a kid as well, when I was growing up, I've always had that. I was never really into working in a company. I was never into doing a 9-to-5 job or anything like that. So now we're at this point, touch wood, that I get to experience the best of both worlds, that I have enough freedom that I can handle this YouTube thing, the content thing on my own. At the same time, I have the good parts of or the good perks of a job, which is having a team to work with, having a sense of security and all the other factors. So long story short, the cultural shift that has happened in the company has helped me a lot on a personal level. And second thing is you spoke about governance, right? And that is a thing that we see a lot with crypto or Web3 companies, that there's that problem, right? There's decentralization. So there is no governance. Even if there is, it's very loose. And a lot of people... So when we talk about, I think, because you mentioned FTX, there was this one particular instance where he was raising money and I think he was playing a video game on the side. Yeah? So I can imagine what that environment is like. It's very loose. It's very chilled out. And one of the problems with having... Too much freedom is a problem. I firmly believe that. And too much comfort. So that introduces too much comfort. You leave no space for pressure. Pressure is actually a good thing in a work environment. So I understand that is a very different approach. Not entirely different. We still have decentralized. So as you mentioned, we also have everything transparent on Notion. So I think that is like a beautiful middle ground that you personally have been able to hit. Because on one end, as an employee, I'm not even a consultant. I don't work as a frontline worker at the company. I mostly work behind the scenes. And even then, I know what is really going on with the company, what policies are being introduced, what is happening with the consultants, and all of those things. But at the same time, I know that I have to upload 2 videos. Yeah, I know that I cannot. I know that I have to run, let's say, 5 experiments. I'm doing a little bit of inside thing, but I have to run 5 experiments in 1 quarter. So that is a good thing. And how happy are you with this governance approach? And would you like to expand a little bit on that? Because this is particularly a very different thing in the Web3 context.
Yes, that's something that I noticed. You know, in just 2 shout outs to people. One is Edit. Yeah. Edit is the reason we have such good structures today. Yeah. You mentioned last year we had a whole culture. I agree with you. I didn't appreciate that call, but we were not at that phase yet, right? At the making money and updating processes.
Yeah.
End of last year towards this year, we finally have the headspace to talk about culture, and Edit is a fantastic person, and he is the one pushing a lot of these cultures. So shout out to him. The next person is Josh, and Josh actually has the same sentiment. The reason Josh just joined economic design, the reason he joined economic design, because he said, oh, this isn't in the Web3 space, but it's not like a Web3 company. It's not chaotic. It's not super random. There's actually structure in place and governance in place. And to me, I think the reason why I can think about all these things is because I'm genuinely here for a long time.
Yeah.
I've got a 20-year plan, and this 20-year plan didn't start today. This 20-year plan started in 2018. I've been building this plan. I update it every single year.
Yeah.
So this is not something that I just thought about.
Yeah.
There is a system, and when we are the right place or right chapter of this book, we execute the system or we build a system. So governance is in general is really very important. Plus, also because I come from economics.
Yeah.
And we do a lot of economics research. In one of these papers in economics talks about how corporate governance is broken in traditional finance space. You have all these private equity firms owning most of these public stocks. Nothing wrong with that. The only problem that I see with that, or there's a problem that this very famous paper wrote, I forgot what the title is, but something like everything in the hands of 10 companies. These 10 companies are voting on behalf of people, vote on these public companies, make decisions on behalf of the system. So it's almost like government, you know? Government are elected in a democratic way. You elect the government, on behalf and make proper decisions. But with these private equity companies, nobody's really doing that. You don't exactly say, oh, I give my whatever stock to BlackRock and BlackRock please vote on my behalf in my interest because, you vote for me. But there's no such thing as that.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a big problem I see with Web2. Fi, Web2, whatever. I see a big problem with that. The whole point of Web3 is to change ownership, is to change the power to the people. And how do we build that? And that's why at Economic Society, we're building all these systems, we're building new economies, we're building accountability, ownership, distribution of power, of air power to people and build a better future.
Okay.
And this is what we are building for projects.
Yeah.
And to me, I believe very much in leading by example. And we need to do that as a company to make sure that we can govern ourselves and that we can help other people to govern their systems. Of course, we have tools in place, and that's when Aorus calls it. Aorus is one of these tools to help to govern. But we need to act as a good example. We know how to govern ourselves. We've got rules in place. Going back to talking about that balance, yes, too much freedom is not good.
Yeah.
Freedom is also not good.
Yeah.
How do you find that middle ground?
Yeah.
And the middle ground is really, how do we get governance to define the boundaries, the
clearings?
Yep. Things like doing illegal stuff, you're fired immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything that's illegal, anything that you have to go to court or go to jail for, that is just against our norms.
Yes.
We're all about fairness and of people, but if you do something illegal, you hurt someone, you're fired.
Yeah.
So that, to me, that's important. Governance is drawing that boundaries and then allowing people to just play within that boundaries. And so you mentioned about experimenting and how you get more trusted ownership in the last decommission, right? And that's because we get to focus on culture again. And the six principles in a company. And two of the key principles of this six, two of them, one is experimentation and one is trust.
Yeah.
So, of course, I trust everyone in a company. That's why people in a company. And what I've been wanting to focus more, especially on the culture, is how do I make sure that the team also trusts the company back? The team trusts
me
to make the right decisions. And that's where ownership comes in
today.
And that is why from principles, from values, six values that we have, with principles. So values is like a guiding star. This is the value that we want to embrace. Principles are a little bit more the casual reminders on the direction of how to go. And so to double down on the trust part, the principles that we have is things like ownership. How do I create an environment where people have more ownership of what they do, have more ownership on the outcomes, their responsibility and accountability of the outcomes? We didn't have that before. Because before that, which is a culture I really hated, and I'm glad we came after with them, that was very corporate. One person gatekeeping the information.
We had approval system as well at that point,
And it was very restrictive. I didn't like that. In a trust environment, it's not just about ownership and accountability, but you should trust the company trust the team to just do their work. We have to approve of everything that's micromanaged, and I do not have time for I'm not going to pay anyone to do it because we're working with ad hoc, hits.
Yeah.
So I think it's also we treat people with respect.
Yes.
So that's on the trust part of things. Increasing ownership as part of the principles of the company. Second thing is experimentation.
Yeah.
And number one, keep experimenting, right? Doesn't matter if the whole point of experiments is that you get to fail. And that's okay.
Yeah.
I've failed many times before, and you cannot be here without failing.
Yeah.
If you have never failed, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Too conservative.
Yeah.
We're here to make a difference. We're here to change the future. You're going to experiment, and there will be mistakes in that today.
Yeah.
So how do we navigate that? And that's where experiments come in. And to me, experiments, just do it. And one of the guiding principles for that is do it and ask for forgiveness later.
Yeah.
Kind of like, not religious, you're just kind of like Jesus and God. Right?
Yeah.
You do the mistakes and then you pray for forgiveness. Same thing. That's what experiments are for. Just go and do it. As long as you make calculated risks in making a decision, where trust comes back in. And then go and experiment. See what works. The thing is, the world changed because someone decides the old way of doing it doesn't work anymore. I don't like the old way of a new way of doing it. Now to experiment with them. And I want us to be the company, to be the culture, to do that. we are in the cutting edge. We are in the actual bleeding edge of technology.
Yeah.
Like every conference I go to, every meeting I go to, people always ask me, where are we moving toward? How do we navigate this? What challenges could come out? How are we shaping out? How is economy design going to change and move forward? And so we're at the cutting edge. And to be the one pioneering the change, you got to think different. You got to experiment. You got to be radical. Because it's the crazy people who will change the world. And I hope we're the crazy people that change the world.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. And something that got me thinking is, based on this entire part of the conversation, is also something that you talk about in your workshops, which is 100% decentralization is not possible. Yeah. And that ideology is reflected in our company culture as well. Right. So removing the company culture out of it in the DeFi space and the Web3 space, everything crypto related, because that was one of the selling points of crypto when the blockchain started, that everything is decentralized and stuff. And people were very optimistic about it. But turns out that gave birth to a lot of scams, a lot of, you know, people losing money and all that. Now, I think people are starting to realize that, okay, maybe decentralization is not the topmost thing that we need with crypto. There are other things at stake. So I want to ask you, what are these other things which are more important than decentralization? And secondly, what are your thoughts on decentralization and how it should be tackled in terms of the market?
Yeah, good question. And I agree with you. There's no such thing as 100% centralization or 100% centralization. It's finding that little middle ground of what works. And to me, the way I'm seeing this is, how do we build the right systems? It's all about systems. How to be productive is the systems that you have in place, the routines that you have in place. These are all systems. Leadership, training someone else, getting them to new leadership positions, and working for team. How do you allocate tasks to the team and all come together to deliver an output? That's a system. Yeah. All these economies, a debt protocol, a lending protocol, a game, these are all systems to allow people to work together. You know? And systems at the end of the day is like just marketplace. We're supposed to call people shooting. And that, to me, that's how systems work.
Yep.
And to me, that's more important than centralization or decentralization.
Yeah.
Because centralization and decentralization is just a parameter, a future of the system. It's about building the system. And that's the power. That's the reason why I'm a crypto in the first place. The power that distributed ledger technology built provides. It becomes a new playing ground. We can build systems. And you don't have to think about how the execution works. We're all done at the back end. And now we need to think about, how do we build good systems? Good systems, fair systems. Going back to corporate governance, corporate governance is a system of how do you allocate decision making? How do you make sure that the rules of how funds in one company shouldn't go to another company? Yeah. Like, these are just rules of how this system boundaries.
Right.
And in the same way, crypto is about building these systems. How do we create these systems? How do we create the boundaries? How do we create the rules of how people should behave in the system?
Yeah.
It's everything we do at Kikinero Design. It's everything that we do within the company as well. That's how I live my life as well.
Yeah.
I have systems, I have rules in place guided by different kind of principles to make sure that you don't go out of line.
Yeah.
Make sure that, yes, I have to make decisions, but my decisions have to be within certain kind of principles, and make sure that decisions are fair. They take into consideration different perspectives to make the best decisions. So to me, the systems are more important than centralized or decentralized. I think that's very...
Yeah. And one of the things is something that I've personally thought about, not sure how accurate or what sense it makes, but basically the reason why decentralization, at least in the when Bitcoin was invented and when blockchain came into the picture, I've always thought about a lot of things in the society as a pendulum. They either move from the far left to the right, from one extreme to another. So previously, if you look at traditional way of working, governance and companies and culture and corporate, as we said, it has been a very centralized, very close environment. And that kind of gave rise to decentralization. Then it kind of, because people had been too frustrated with the centralized environment for so long, when they saw that, okay, there's this thing where no one owns anyone, no one rules anything, people tried to jump that train of decentralization, and the pendulum suddenly shifted to the other extreme of it. And now, after having gone through multiple bull runs, bear runs, there are governments who are genuinely taking interest into this. So now we are at this point where things have settled down. Serious people are working into this space. And so now we are kind of coming into the middle at the very base. And so now we are trying to find a more optimal solution to this thing. And that is where I think the systems come into place. Like, we don't have to think about centralization, decentralization anymore. middle ground is systems. And how do we design that? Sure, a system might differ. A system that we have might differ from a system that another company might have. And going on whichever end of the spectrum, centralization or decentralization, will obviously be a subjective choice. But I think the baseline sentiment of the market and in general, because whenever you talk in conferences and when you talk about decentralization not being super important, the audience or the people who are attending that, they agree with that. Yeah, which is very strange, because that is kind of against what Bitcoin started for. And now I understand that the sentiment that systems is more important as you said, it's a pioneering kind of thing, right? It is more important for the psyche as well, as opposed to how the company functions and how much the money flows in. So that is what I think of centralization and decentralization. Moving to a different, let me just segue into another part. You spoke at the very beginning of the podcast, you spoke about we are a company and not an agency, right? My question to you is, what separates a company from an agency? And I want you to answer this without taking Aurus into consideration, because Aurus is obviously, it's a product, so it will obviously put us under the company tagline, but we've been doing ED for I think 4 or 5 years now, more than that, actually 6 years. So how have you been able to draw that line that we are not an agency?
Yeah.
And that's actually one of, because company versus agency is just one of the business models of operating, right?
Yeah.
Operating decision. And an agency, in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't like an agency. An agency is where people come in to work on a project and they eat. So let's say there's a client that requires 2 months worth of work to design their economy. And so we just go out to the market and just hire someone just for these 2 months and then they. And that's an agency. So it's independent contribution, it's project based, and some of the agency just manages the output. A company, on the other hand, it's very different. A company is where someone actively works in the company, whether there's projects or not. Ideally, there is project. Whether there's projects or not, you're working in the company and you're doing more than just that client engagement. A lot of knowledge sharing, IP creation, things like people created a beautiful new technology or new incentive mechanism called the Reserve Utility Token. And because he created that IP, we can share this IP. Team, and so we can share this with whatever project that seems like it could experiment and play with this as the incentive mechanism, right? Enzo created the people on how do you define GDP of these systems? We're moving towards calculating gross network value economies, so we can take this IP and start experimenting, play with the kind of different partners that we have. To me, a company is a lot more exciting. It's about synergy. In an agency firm, it's like, it's very transactional.
It's very mechanical.
It's very mechanical. You come in, you contribute, goodbye.
Yeah.
In a company, you should feel value.
Yeah.
1 plus 1, it's 100.
Mm.
Because there's so many other intrinsic value that can be created that 1 plus 1 is not 2 anymore.
Mm.
1 plus 1 is so much more than 2. And that balance to me, that trade-off to me is actually really important, because we're here to build something great. Because I'm not here to build something for 2 years, extract all the value, and then the Bahamas and just sit down, drink my cocktails, and spend the rest of my life just chilling by the beach. Here to build something great. Here to build a thing that lasts for generations. To do that, I need good tools. I need good systems. I need good culture. I need good corporate governance. And I think add them all together, to me, it's the reason why we chose to move towards the company direction. Because people here are here to stay. People here are here to contribute, to do something, to build something great together. We cannot do this alone. And I need a team to do this together with me, and we're moving in the right direction together. To me, I think it's like taking a spaceship and we want to go to the moon. And I'm collecting the best people, putting in the spaceship, go to the moon, we set up the moon, and then we start getting everyone else to come to the moon.
Right.
And I think that's, to me, that's the power that companies have, the agencies still have. Of course, risk, one, very different, right? Agencies, very little risk. I was speaking to a company 2 days ago, and they are an agency model. So they do economics consulting, and basically similar to what we do, but they're an agency model. Only people that's full-time are the founder and co-founder. Everyone else, an agency,
they're
just there for the project, and then they leave. So there's no longevity in building custom. There's no longevity in the ownership of the project we work with. When we work with projects, because we're here for generations. Projects I want to work with needs to be here for generations.
Mm.
So we do a lot We do a lot of due diligence on projects. We say no to a lot of projects, but database say we don't want to work with certain kind of projects because of these red flags.
Okay.
You cannot do this as an agency. You do this as a company because we have this vision, because we have this direction. And to me, that's important. It will be more risk because it's still a project. You still have sustaining. But I think there's so much better outcomes in the long run than to think about the risk in the short run.
Yeah, it's almost like a company provides you with that stability and that peace of mind as well for the employees and for you as well, because this is not just a transactional kind of thing. So I get it. Moving on to Aorus. So we launched, Aorus hasn't officially been launched yet, but he started working on Aorus last year, if I'm not wrong.
Full-time working last year, and before that, 1 year of different experimentations again.
Right.
So I mean that to understand the product market fit.
Yeah. So, and I think it was still like the market was not booming. We were still kind of in the bear run. Was Aorus kind of like, was it that we were in a bear market and you had to find a solution to kind of, you know, bounce back out of it? Because we don't want to sit there and let the market take control over our company, right? Was it one of those decisions that we need to get out of this? Let's find a solution. What is it? Okay, this is an untapped market. Let's get into that. Let's divert, but let's also not forget our roots. Let's still focus on the clients. Was it that type of decision to start a product?
Okay, so good question about Aorus. And just tying it back to the first question. Number one, I do make decisions based on market conditions, which I don't know. Might be a stupid thing. Maybe I don't know, because Aorus was going to be launched anyway. Aorus was an idea that was created in 2020.
Okay.
Because I knew what the space needed. I just didn't know what that looked like initially. Yeah. So 2020 was a lot of brainstorming. 2021 is a lot of exploration.
Crazy.
See, do we need to start this company? Maybe the existing platforms out there. So I was speaking to so many companies. All these data analytics firms that you see today, I've already spoken to either their lead engineering team or their CEOs. Work very closely, that to understand, can we lose them instead? Because, you know, to start a brand new company, it's just really hard. This is a whole different, because we do professional services. And this is a product company.
Yeah,
different
exactly.
Different model, different culture, different way of doing, very different way of scaling. So ideally, you don't want to stop that. And if there's something out there, I want to use it, right? Because it's just a lot easier. Turns out there's nothing out there. Even there's something similar out there, no one has the vision that I have. No one is going in the direction that I have. And I know what I want to do, and I know where we're going. So turns out, okay, fine, we'll build it on our own. So 1 year to explore if we can work with people. The second year was to explore, what does that look like? What are the tools? What kind of experiments we can do? Maybe we don't have to build a branding company. Maybe we can build almost like a small proof of concept. We do it within Mavericks Design, and that's it. But as we experimented more, turns out we can build company, a standalone company that provides value to other people as well. And so 2022, finally, you know what is required. Double down on business requirements, check requirements. We've done a lot of experiments already. We know what works, what doesn't work. Implement it, build it, scale it, and now we can launch it on the 1st of January, 2025.
Right.
That is the direction that we have. It's because I know that I want to do this anyway. And number two, it's not about market conditions. The market conditions part is interesting and it's curious because people around me, they knew that I wanted to do this already.
Yes. Yep.
And in 2021, and like late 2021 and early 2022, we keep saying, why don't you just raise our funds? Very easy to raise.
Yeah.
Time was raised. It's just you're raising. A lot of people will give you money and then, you know, and then you can just keep building. Just focus on building. Number one, we were not ready yet. Number one, I could not describe what the business model is. I could not describe the mode. I couldn't describe why we are better than other people.
Yeah.
I don't want to raise for the sake of raising. I see capital as a leverage. I have the business model nailed down. I have the team nailed down. I have the processes nailed down. I get the capital to double down on that because I already figured out what the way to success. I just need the capital as a gun to oil the system so we can get to the end much faster.
Yeah.
I already know the process. I don't want to take money as a way to explore. I don't want to waste people's money. I don't want to waste people's time.
Yeah.
I don't want to waste people to believe in the project only to realize, oh, she doesn't know what the hell she's doing. That's not what I want to do.
No.
I know what I'm doing and I take the funds to reach the system. So it means faster. Stevie, that's why I didn't want to raise that. Sure, we could have raised a lot then.
Yeah.
But I want to raise for a reason. So we did our angel round in 2023, like, and towards end of 2023. And that's because I knew what we did $20, right?
Yep.
And I think when you have a business plan, when you know what the hell you're doing, when you have a long-term vision and you're not just there for the hype, people can see that. And that's why we raise funds, right? People didn't say, oh, how do you navigate through the bear market? People know that how we're going to go there, because I have all the recommendations, because I share them with the team as well. Something you do, what are the risks, and then how well you need to get in there.
Yep.
So we have all that in place already. And the funds is just to order the sister. And so that's where we are. It's not because it's a bear market or bull market that we raise, because the timing is right for us. And the market conditions, they're going to change every day anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not a witch with a crystal ball.
Yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense, especially the funding part. Like, there has to be like a purpose, because in between, like, I think this was during COVID, a lot of companies were raising funds, and even the Web2 companies, Web3 companies as well. And a lot of these companies then had to go through massive layoffs. They had to let people go. Some of them even shut down, right? And the aftermath of this was very similar to what you said. Like, people raised funds first and then started to work later on, in a nutshell, right? And contrary to this, there's a company in India. It's Zerodha. It's basically a brokerage company, a stock broker. Yeah, and it's the largest one out there. And the thing is, the founder of that company is the youngest billionaire. And one of the things he always talks about is that he runs his company as if it's an old school family owned shop. You know, we set up a shop, we start selling. If we need money, we get it. If we don't, we don't. And to this date, he has not raised a single penny. And he's the youngest billionaire of India right now. And that is like a very, like, very beautiful thing when you think about it, that business can be very simple. Oftentimes, it's about providing value. And that's where I also want to segue into something that you very often say, which is, you don't focus on the money, you always focus on the value, right? Can you expand a little bit on that ideology? Because that, again, going back to the Indian context, if anyone from India is watching, there's a beautiful movie actually called Three Idiots.
I love that movie.
Oh, you watched that?
I watched it 5 times.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's a surprise for me as well. But in that movie, there's a quote which is like, chase excellence, money will follow you. And this is very similar to what you do and what we've been trying to implement as well. So would you like to? Yeah.
Yes. So that quote actually is from one of these investors. I don't know if, like, it's Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, Lee Ka-shing, one of these guys. He said, don't chase the money. Chase the excellence or chase the value creation.
Yeah.
Money will come.
Yeah.
Because what is money at the end of the day? If we do economics, right?
Yeah.
We know what money is. And money at the end of the day is, it's a way to represent or signal something. Could be signal convenience. So you buy water at a 7-Eleven and it's so much more expensive, but because it's convenient, so you have to pay the extra thing. Money is just a way to signal value to trade.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we're just trading something. We're trading time, we're trading value creation, whatever. Money is just a way to make it easy to trade. But the true thing we're trading is value. Intrinsic value, extrinsic value, doesn't matter. It's value that you provide to the world. And that's why, to me, that's more important, because people can take money away. Someone can change monetary policy. Money can appear, money can disappear. Someone can create money. Someone can create a stable coin on crypto, on the blockchain. Someone can create their own currencies. It's just a tool. And chasing a tool just feels like a waste of time.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important to just write principles. And if you focus on chasing value, about creating value, then you're about giving to others. Giving something to the world. And what comes back is money, is recognition, whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
And that to me is more important than chasing money. Money's going to disappear. Or one day you're chasing USD, but tomorrow the world decides to switch over to RMB or this over to Indian rupees. And does that mean I need to change my strategy all over again? No, because value is something that we all agree. Maybe not everyone agrees that USD is the best.
Yeah.
But value, everyone agrees about that.
Yeah.
I've been speaking in so many countries, so many continents, so many conferences, and everyone understands the value we bring as economic society.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it shows that we're on the right track. We're heading in the right direction. And value, not letting.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense, because the way I have thought about this is money is like a short-term game, and value is like the long-term game. And to quote Naval on that one, he's like very much always play the long-term games. I think that is one of the reasons why your judgment has been so long-term. Like, as you said, you have a plan ready for like the next 20 years, right? And I think one of the factors for that might be this ideology that, okay, we are here for value. Because if it was just about money, then we would have just been riding the trends in the Web3 market.
If we were just here for the money, we will close the shop already.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of money, we will do all the shitty decisions and we'll work with companies.
Yeah, exactly.
All the money, close the company, restart again when the market's
ready. Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's not what we do. I live my life 20 years at a time and I've got 40 years planned. I reduce it to the company is 20 years and for the clients, we're with about 3 to 5 years.
Right.
So we're always thinking long term. And I think to me that changes your perspective.
Yeah.
Because if you think long term, the market could be bust, could be boom.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
The long run. And bad companies fail during bear market.
Bad market. Yeah.
That's normal. Yeah. Companies, they survive bear market. Great companies, they're shaped by bear market.
Right.
And to me, that's very important. We're a company that will stay throughout whatever market condition. And every of these situations, over this crisis, it becomes an opportunity to reshape, an opportunity to tighten the culture, opportunity to revamp the processes, make it a lot more efficient,
the
opportunity to explore new markets. And if you see this as an opportunity that helps to build into the lessons learned as we move towards the long run, then this will always happen again. You know, history doesn't repeat, but history writes. And if we know how to survive something before, we'll survive it again. It's like, we've done this before, we're doing this again.
Yeah,
true. That makes a lot of sense. This is, by the way, the end of the podcast. We are planning to shoot or record more of such podcasts. So let us know about your feedback, what your thoughts were, if you did enjoy, if you did not enjoy, whatever it is, in the comment section below. Before we close this, I want Lisa, you to talk about three things. First one is the Token Insight product that we have launched. And secondly, Aurus. Not too deep into that, but a brief introduction and economics design. Because for the new viewers who might not know about us, I wanted to do this in the beginning, but then that would have just ruined the conversation. And as you said, value is much more important than just selling something. What is Aurus? Yeah.
All right. So what is Aurus? Aurus is a data analytics tool that provides intelligence to users.
Yeah.
It's a tool for self-service economy management.
Okay.
So if you look at the life cycle of an economy, or life cycle of a company, the first phase, 0 to 1, where you go to market, find product market fit, get an MVP out there and get initial users. This is, there's a lot of theory, even with economic side. There's a lot of theory in play.
Yeah.
Sort of the business model canvas and write everything out. And this is how I want to structure the company. And then we go to market.
Right.
And this is what we do with token swap. With economy design, we use theory to build all these things out. And then we go to Mark.
Yeah.
The mainstays, 1 to 100, it's a long period of time. We don't use theory anymore. You cannot build on theory. You help real users
right.
data. Half about simulation. Matter anymore. Because we're true users, we want to understand how users behave, given the incentives that we create. How users are retaining on the platform. Are users coming back once every 30 days, once every day, once every 7 days? How are people interacting with our platform, our product? And our economy. It's very important. And the 1 to 100, the tool for that, there's no tool for that. Help economists to update the economy, improve the economy. And this is where Aurus comes in.
Right.
Aurus becomes the self-service tool for data analysts, business analysts, and research analysts to figure out what's going on in the economy. Then we can make long-term decisions.
Got it.
And we have a lot of features there to make it easier for analysts to use the system and do different kind of analysis and get insights from the intelligence. We can talk about that in our next video.
Yeah, yeah. And about the Token Insight product that Gio just created. Yeah.
Yes. So we work with a lot of big enterprise companies, right? We work with a lot of Web2 coming to Web3, listed companies, companies in second generation. And we also work a lot with more established products or founders who have founded like 2 or 3 companies and they know how to do it. So we're very used to this tight caliber of people. At the same time, we're here to build something. We're here to help even bootstrap startups to come into the space. It's difficult for them to afford us. And that's why the book was created. That's why the academy was created. People can go into, can use these platforms and resources that we create to go and build their economy. But time is of essence. They don't have all the time in the world. Some people have time, but not everyone has time. That's why we built this tool called Token Insights that provide insights to the kind of economy that you have created. And the output of that is a PDF report that shows the risk of the project, the different potential downfalls, how to mitigate that, and how someone can analyze and evaluate the risk, the project that we've operated, and using the insight that we have. Not going to do a usual 2-3 months engagement, but just 2 weeks, you get that output, and you can move forward with that. Because at the end of the day, at this phase, when you're bootstrapping your early stage, here you're creating this thing called minimum viable economy. Just like minimum viable product, you have a minimum viable economy to really get the product out there, find product market fit, get user acquisition. And we don't need to build everything. And so this token insight provides the insights to your token, your economy, and people, anyone, bootstrap people, very low cost, they can get it. It's the cost or this engagement is $2,000, and across 100 people get 50% discount, and it's just $1,000.
Yeah. Just to specify, the product itself is not a PDF. It's actually, we work on it, and the report is the product, whatever you get. All right. Anyways, that was it for this video. I'll see you next time when you're in India or I'm in Singapore. Hopefully we'll do more of these. And that's it. Thank you, guys. Thank you for watching.